Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we talk about a bunch of books that have come out this week and maybe an advance review. We'll see.
Sneak an advance in, get you a little peek. A little dirty peek.
A little dirty peek. Let's take a dirty little peek at our first title, Nightwing 113 from DC Comics, written by Tom Taylor, Marv Wolfman, and Michael W. Conrad, and art by the naughty Daniel DiNicolo, Bruno Redondo, and Howard Porter. This is Legacy number 300, and if you've been reading the run on Nightwing, of course you know this is going to be a tearjerker, this is going to be a heartwarmer, as Nightwing is given the key to the city for his birthday. There's some twists, there's some turns, there's not a dry eye in the house. Pete, take it away.
Yeah, I just had a quick question up at the top here. It's number 113, but technically it's number 300. Why comics? Why?
So that's this is something that we've been doing for, like, I don't know, 10 years or so, and we've talked about it a lot. It's called legacy numbering, and basically what they do is they take all of the issues of a title and they add it up. So in this case, they determine there have been 300 issues of Nightwing out, even though this is second or third volume of Nightwing that's been released. So that's the idea here.
But on the historical things, don't you think maybe they should kind of do, like, number 113 wink emoji, technically though it's number 300, you know what I mean? Do something
on the
cover.
That's literally on the cover. On the cover, it's
that's
like
what
Nightwing.
I'm saying. Let's do that on the cover.
You want to add a wink?
So your tip is do the thing they're already doing. That's what you'd like to do.
Yeah, I'd like honestly, them to do the thing.
Like continue
because I want
to
know that it's 300 and not.
And it does say that on the cover. So you again, your tip to DC is whatever you're doing, continue to do it.
I'm just trying to.
Pete's my therapist, and every time we meet, he says, "Keep it up," and then he bills me for a full session.
I would love it if they had Nightwing on the cover of Nightwing, which they do, so that's great. I honestly cried at this book, and I was shocked and
what
surprised.
What part got you?
The part that got me, and this is getting into spoilers for the book, everything is very sweet and nice, as I knew going in. All of the stuff with Barbara Gordon and Nightwing and getting this key to the city. Oh, so good.
So
absolutely
good.
Lovely to do that. But the part that killed me, and this is the spoiler, is the two pages that are co-written with Marv Wolfman and art by Bruno Redondo, where Nightwing celebrates getting the key to the city by buying pizza for the whole city, and they go to Marv and George's. Now, for anybody who doesn't know, it's Marv Wolfman and George Perez. George Perez passed away 2 years ago, I want to say now, and they co-created Nightwing, and I'm getting like a little teary-eyed even talking about it, but the proprietor there is Marv Wolfman, and I was like, oh, when I saw the name of the restaurant, I was like, oh, that's very sweet.
That's a cute Easter egg. It felt like a nice little thing.
100%. And then you see Marv Wolfman as the proprietor, and you're like, oh, wow, Marv Wolfman's the proprietor. That's so cool. What a wonderful tribute. And then they cut to a picture of George Perez in the background, you're like, oh my God, George of Marv and George's is also passed away in the continuity of the DC universe. And then a whole point is Marv, the character, being like, Nightwing, how much you've grown over the years. Me and George, I'm so proud of you. George was proud of you too. And I'm like, what?
Well, the thing with Nightwing that we get in this issue is this guy's got a lot of dads. He's got too many dads. He's got Marv Wolfman, George Perez. He's got Batman. He's got Alfred. He's overloaded with dads. And his actual biological father, the Flying Grayson.
Yeah.
That's a lot of dads.
It's not too many. It's a lot of dads, but it's not too many.
Have you ever watched a television program, My Two Dads, from the early 90s?
Never heard of it.
That whole premise of that show was like, this kid's got too many dads.
Do you know what? I wish they played with that premise in some way, the one from the title, which they did, and I was happy about that.
Weird. Yeah, they really...
First off, this was an awesome issue, just really hit you in the feels on a lot of levels, as Alex pointed out. But I was also really worried by the time it got to the end, because Nightwing can only be happy and good for so long before something horrible happens. And when it's really good, I just can't help but being like, oh, God, what's going to happen? What's happening next? And I guess it's kind of sad that I can't just enjoy things without kind of worrying about the flip side of it.
Yeah, especially when you love a medium that is about creating dread amongst the readers.
It's weird that
you're into that. A man who is constantly being like, wait, what? They're killing this person? And we're like, yeah, no, I don't think technically, but that's what the end of the issue would tell you. What I want to say about this is that the way that they've just built Nightwing into this perfectly good hero. He's a good hero, a great crime fighter, and just like a sound person. And that is like, it's so hard. But this book just has such goodwill. It has a positivity just beaming out of it. And it's such a comfort every month to read this. So I will get on board with you, Pete, in that the last page reveal and the next arc is filling me with dread in a book that brings me comfort.
I also like how it's a little bit kind of preachy in the way it's like, hey, fucking millionaires, you know, look at what they're doing here. They got some money, just invested in a pizza place that gives out to people who need in the community. And like, look at how easy that is. You know,
it's
what
like
I mean?
$1 a slice.
Yeah.
So come on. I also, before we move on, want to give a shout out to the backup story by Michael W. Conrad and Howard Porter, which finds Nightwing following a countdown in an almost silent story as he tries to stop a bomb. I like Howard Porter's art anyway, but this is like next level what was going on.
Agreed.
It's so kinetic throughout this entire story. Michael W. Conrad does a bang up job writing it and providing the tension there. I thought this was great.
Nice.
Really great. And sort of still showing all of the same qualities I was just naming about Nightwing, but in a completely almost wordless story that was all just action, which was amazing.
Next up, Cobra Commander number 4 from Image Comics. Art by Joshua Williamson, art by Andrea Milani. There is a winged guy who is named
Nemesis Enforcer.
Yes, and a normal assembly of letters and words.
And he is trying to kill a gang that is called the...
The Dreadnoks!
Right. And meanwhile, in the background, there is a man with a mask who is lurking there, and his name is...
Cobra Commander.
Yeah, I knew that one, actually. But anyway, there's a lot of machinations going on here. We get some big mythology stuff happening for the Energon universe. Pete, as our resident Yo-Jo, what did you think about this?
Yo-Jo.
This continues to be just glorious. Also, the kind of fun last page reveal, they kind of told you the name, so it wasn't like you had to be a super G.I. Joe nerd to kind of figure out who it was.
I liked that.
I liked that
they told you, especially when it was like Sinister Infester
Destro.
Like they don't. No, the winged
Nemesis Enforcer you're talking about?
I'm pretty sure it's Sinister Infester.
Nope. No, it's not.
That's a good name for a Joe, though, right?
No, it's not. It's not.
Because sort of a bug man, maybe Sinister Infester.
Oh, my God. Anyways, I just think that this continues.
The G.I. Joe headquarters, like they just put literally any name they could think of up on a blackboard. They're like, do all of them.
I don't know how the brainstorm worked. But
no, they just, everyone comes in the room and they're like,
block, you got it. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And your name will be Bad Wheel. And your name.
Do you think they kind of rolled dice and then kind of, I mean, who knows how it went, but they had some fun in that office. That's for sure. Those names must have come out of a lot.
Commander, is my name Puckered Butthole? Is that what you said? That feels unfair. That feels like really unrelated.
Yeah, put him on TV. Snow Saturday job. Mornings.
Snow job. Yeah. Could I be Snow Job instead?
Yeah. Yeah, I just think this is just really well executed and a lot of fun, where you kind of have this thing that they set up of like, we're going to give you what's going on in the world, but then at the end of each issue, you get a fun kind of reveal of the next kind of bad guy. And yeah, this was fun. I mean, Nemesis and Enforcer versus Cobra Commander, that's just a great idea, well executed. Yeah, I just love the pace and the action of these. This is just, if someone could have told me that, like, as a kid, like, oh man, you think G.I. Joe the cartoon is awesome? Wait till the fucking comic book drops, yeah. Bro. You're going to lose your effing mind.
I mean, this comic is very good. It's too many nouns, though. There's all these nouns. Sinister.
I have a legitimate question. Destro is not part of Cobra?
Yeah, Destro is part of Cobra, but in this story is not. I mean, he's also
He's a different guy than Cobra Commander, yet they both wear shiny metal masks.
Oh, my God. Yes. Yes.
That's a fair question. I will say that's a fair question, Pete. No, that's a fair question.
It's completely different people.
They independently reach the same conclusion.
Well, one of them probably saw the other. It's like when Armageddon and Deep Impact came out. It's like, yeah.
Or
yeah,
Ants in a Bug's Life. Or...
Yeah. They're like, yeah, we were sort of cribbing off each other a little bit.
I don't even know where to begin with you guys.
Yeah, just to wrap up before we move on, this is like the Ants of comic books.
This is a blast. This is not only is the art fantastic.
So was Ants.
Wow. What a take. I agree. The art is actually really just great action art from Andrea Milani. Like the, when like, infected wing
Nemesis Enforcer.
I can't keep it in my brain. I can't keep it in my brain. It won't stick. It doesn't stick in my brain. Too many nouns. It is very good. I also want to say the way that this universe is built around the energy source is very strange. It's like building a superhero universe around like solar power. Cause like the Joes are after
building a world around gas,
dude. It's just this classic kind of thing of like everybody has the same wants, but are the good guys going to get it first and do good by it, or are the bad guys going to get the energon and nobody? You know what I mean? So it's a classic scenario, but instead of it being money and power, it's just energon, dude. I don't know what your problem is.
But I'm complimenting by saying I think it's actually smart because it inherently pits these two sides of the universe against each other. Because like in Cobra Commander, it's like we want energon. What's the source of that? The blood of Truck Daddy. They're going to be trying to drink Truck Daddy, Optimus Prime's blood. Stop. That's what's happening. That's the future of this. I predict. Cobra Commander and his Destro twin are going to be out there trying to. They're going to be talking to trucks and like, wake up, truck. Are you a truck with juice we want, or are you a regular truck with gas? And that's what they're going to be doing. They're going to be knocking.
I do that to trucks all the time. Like, in
real are you my truck daddy, or are you just a sad truck?
I just go up to trucks and I'm like. You know, just
you drink gasoline.
I drink gasoline. I'm not
siphoning people's gas out of their cars.
No, drinking.
Yeah, he's drinking.
Yeah, like a Slurpee. Roxxon presents Thor, number one from Marvel, written by Al Ewing, art by Greg Land. This is spinning out of the Immortal Thor title, where Thor has gotten trapped by a comic book created by the Minotaur, his enemy, to change his story. Here we are getting a parody version that is set in a world that revolves all around Roxxon. I was iffy about this going into it because I was worried that given it is published by Marvel, which is owned by Disney, I didn't know how far they could go into the satire. And they do go in a different direction that's a little more harmless, I think, for the most part. Right up until two-thirds of the way through, when they switched to the regular continuity, which really elevated the whole comic book for me, those couple of pages there, I thought that was very smartly done, tied very nicely to Immortal Thor. I'm skirting spoilers for anybody who hasn't read it. But really, really good stuff. And it really drew into focus, I thought, what Al Ewing is doing with this book.
I love the satire here. And I actually think Greg Land, the choice of Greg Land as the artist is so smart. It feels like really just like the perfect person to bring to life these this story. I mean, Mark Russell comics, for instance, I think you should definitely pick this comic up because it feels right in line with some of the stuff he's been doing on a lot of his titles over at Ahoy and anywhere else.
Well, I guess I'm the one who maybe is a little bit on the other side of the fence on this one a little bit. Like, you know, it's hard when the good guy is losing here, and you know, this kind of fake Roxxon Thor is. I mean, it's kind of funny, but it's also just kind of sad and dumb. And also, I love Greg Land's art; I think it's amazing. But a lot of the females in this look the same. That part's a little weird, but, it's also tough because it gets meta, which is kind of pulls me out of the comics sometimes. And the fact that it's just kind of like, what if Thor was a sellout? And it's like, okay.
But I think that's sort of the point. Like Justin was saying with the Greg Land art, like they got him very purposely because his stuff all looks the same and all of his poses are the same. And he's often, perhaps rightly, but accused of just tracing porn frames, and that's pretty much it for his facial expressions. Like, that's sort of the joke here. They don't hit it very hard, to be frank. Like, it's more about tie-ins and corporations. It's very broad satire, more in the realm of parody than anything else. But it, still, I like this book. I thought it was well done, and I do think Greg Land was the right choice here. I hope for his sake he was in on the joke because it makes sense. So there you go. Yeah. Why don't we move on and talk about Blow Away number one from Boom Studios, written by Zach Thompson, art by Nicola Izzo. This is about a woman that is mysteriously monitoring a mountain, and she sees, spoilers for, I guess, the end of the issue, something here that might be a murder or otherwise. It's a little bit of a riff. Like, I would say it's like Rear Window meets Cliffhanger is probably what they're going for here.
Nice. Interesting. Yeah. That's good.
I was talking about the Sylvester Stallone vehicle.
Of course. Yeah. Okay. 100%. Like, for real. And I generally like this book. I thought the plotting was fine, but it's very much one of those books that's like waiting for the turn and the twist at the end of the first issue. But the art is great here. Like, this is really good. If you were a fan of, what's the Greg Rucka book? The one where the woman's wandering around in the snow.
DMT.
No.
Whiteout. You're talking about Whiteout?
Yeah.
Like, that's what I was going
to compare. It has a very sort of like stark look to it. So I was a very big fan of that.
Yeah, I agree. This the art is the real hero in this. But you got this kind of like interesting, cool setup, right? Where we know why she's there. And then kind of like the more we find out, the more kind of shit hits the fan. And by the end, you're like, oh, damn. You know what I mean? So I think that does a great job of our first issue of like pulling into you this world, getting you excited for what's to come and kind of laying it out. And it's not coy about it. We're not getting the end of the story first and then whatever. You know what I mean? Like, I think this is a kind of straightforward, great issue of like, here's what's up. If you're into this, keep reading.
Yeah, I really liked it as well. I feel like the real revelation here is that sometimes the people funding your nature doc are real sticklers for budget. She gets hammered here from a budgetary point of view. And like, oof, tough call.
Well, you know what it's like when you go out.
Great book.
You go out on location, and then you start sending back dailies, Justin, and then people change their fucking minds, and you're already out there. You know what I mean? So it's like you got to make some hard choices while you're out there on location, and you know sometimes morals get lost in all that.
And to be fair, it's like day 45 of her just picture these birds, and I'd be getting a little tapping my foot. I feel like, hey, come on, get the shot. It's just a bird. Put your hand in front of the camera. It's close enough.
Put your
Superman number 13 from DC Comics, written by Joshua Williamson, art by Rafa Sandoval. This is the second part of the House of Brainiac storyline, as Brainiac is attacking Metropolis for unknown reasons. Meanwhile, Superman is seeking out Lobo because Brainiac has an army of Sarnarians. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly. Regardless, they team up. They ride some space bikes. Do Lobo stuff.
That was funny, where it was like, hey, Superman, if you're going to roll with Lobo, you're going to need this. Here you go. Here's your spice bike. Go have some fun, huh? I thought, it was kind of fun to see Superman pissed off and very motivated. And the fact that he needs Lobo is kind of hilarious. So, I love this odd couple teaming them up together. Space spice aside, I'm having a great time here.
In an event that's focusing on too many space Wolverines, which is something that I've talked about a lot, we get to go to the source, the original space Wolverine, which I thought was nice. I really like the banter between Lobo and Superman. And I think, just like when Alex and I were talking last week about how it felt like the first part of this story was built around a couple key images, similarly here, I feel like it was like, can we get Superman on a space motorcycle? And they were like, yep. And then they did, and it was cool.
It was cool.
And I like also, like, the idea that you're going to drop hundreds of Lobo clones. It's like, that be like problem with fun with it. Being able to jump back and forth between those tones is a great idea, especially if you're doing this kind of thing.
Why don't we move on and talk about Ultimate Black Panther number 3 from Marvel, written by Brian Hill, art by Stefano Caselli. In this issue, Black Panther is meeting up with Ultimate Killmonger and Ultimate Storm. He's going into a cave. Meanwhile, Shuri and Okoye are fighting, and that's a real bummer. Pete, you seem excited about this. Take it away.
Yeah, this is an awesome issue. I love this, but this is exactly why I hate Ultimate books, because you fall in love with this idea in this world, and it's not real. It's only in the Ultimate universe, and it may never be addressed again. But I'm having such a great time. First, the Shuri Okoye fight scene, awesome, right? Talking stuff out. Then they're like, you know what? Let's fucking see who's who in here. Let's just size each other up, do some fighting. I thought it was a fun stuff. Okay, and I'm also excited for this idea of like, hey, you've been living this king lifestyle and you got to unlearn some things. And so I think that's a great place for Black Panther to be, and it's awesome that Killmonger is going to be the one kind of leading him in on this. But man, I mean, this is cool kind of like, oh, if I'm going to write this book, I want Storm to be there. I want this to happen. And I think they are hitting this in a kind of fun way. And so I think they're doing a great job of getting you excited about the world that they're kind of building out.
I like this as well. I think we talked about how it felt like it wasn't that much different from the regular Black Panther continuity. And I think they are starting to have more fun with it as each issue sort of comes out. So agree, this is fun.
And the art's unbelievable. You would agree with that, too.
Yeah, I agree.
Kill Your Darlings, number 8 from Image Comics, written by Ethan S. Parker and Griffin Sheridan, art by Robert Quinn. This is the final issue of this title I've been avidly following. We've had the team on twice on the live show.
Should have asked them about this comic.
Yeah, no, it was weird that we were just talking about Bocce or whatever we talked to them about.
Oh, man, I love Bocce.
Yeah. Bocce.
Good game.
It's a great game.
This is about a girl who ends up in her own fantasy land, and some dark things are going on at the same time. Everything pretty much gets settled here. What did you think about the final issue? Did it wrap up nicely, Pete?
I think it did. It was kind of an adorable ending. I mean, it's worth it for the stuffed elephant alone. I think this was just a awesome series. So creative, so kind of fucked up, but also great. Artistically, it's very epic. I just think they did a great job of landing this ship from the crazy start.
You think that elephant was stuffed?
Yeah, it was a stuffed elephant. A talking stuffed elephant.
I really like this. It felt there's you get like a big Pokemon battle in here, huh?
Yeah.
You snuck in a lot of extra stuff.
Uh-huh. I mean, it ended pretty epically. I think Robert Quinn's art was great here. There's some really terrifying creature designs in particular. I love the swerve that they have here into, without spoiling too much, emotion over action that I thought was very nicely done. So overall, just a very good series that I really enjoyed.
Wait. So, Justin, you just thought there was this like a mini elephant. It wasn't like a stuffed elephant, like a bear come to life situation. You think it was just an adorable Australian elephant type of thing?
Yeah, I thought it was a cartoon elephant, which, you know, they're stuffed with joy.
Dream.
But you think he bleeds cotton?
I mean, I guess you're right. It could have been a, you know, like a shirt tail situation here where...
Yeah, I think we got a shirt tail situation. Okay. You exactly took the words right out of my mouth. Those are the words I would have said, a shirt tail situation.
Great. Glad we're on the same page with that.
Yeah. The Displaced, number three from Boom Studios, written by Ed Bryson, art by Elena Casalinguada. I messed her name up every single time. My God.
Yeah.
Casalinguada. This is about a group of folks that are left behind after their whole town disappears. Nobody can really remember them. They're going to slowly disappear as well. I love the series. This mystery is really purposely weird and mystery boxy, but very engrossing. I don't know if we'll get ever any answers here, but at the same time, I'm very much on board. Justin, I want to talk to you about it, though, because you said this is really stressing you out on the live show.
But it's sticking with me. It's not like I'm not worried it's happening to me.
You wake up in the night like, oh, God.
I'm real, though, right? Am I real?
Yeah. Sure. We remember sure, you're here like when the podcast turns off. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, nice. When my Wi-Fi's good. This is really – but I think it because like the dread – it's a great – a book that really does the dread of it well. And it feels like a lot of comics feel like the problem they're struggling with, the premise, is something they're going to surmount. In this book, it feels like they are not going to. And there are still more problems underneath their main problem that they're struggling with. So I really like that. I like the characters. I think the art is really nice, matches the tone of the story across the board. And I do think we're going to learn a lot about the mystery. There are some clues in this very issue, though I don't know if we're going to get a happy resolution at the end of the day.
Oh, boy. Yeah, I think this is a crazy issue. This is really awesome, but it's some spooky ass shit here. It's fun twist at the end. If I wasn't so scared, I'd be having a great time. You know what I mean?
Do you mean in your reality? Oh, sir, you should know, everyone, that there's a knife-wielding maniac hovering over Pete at all times.
At all times.
Recording of this podcast.
The Spectacular Spider-Men. Number two from Marvel, written by Greg Weisman, art by Humberto Ramos. This is a Peter Parker, Miles Morales team-up book. Here, they're getting some coffee. Other things are going on in various places with many characters that we may or may not know. And, there's vermin. There's a lot of vermins.
Oh, God, those numbered vermin.
They have coffee, and people are making out with each other, and there's some people taking pictures of the Leaning Tower of Pisa, and Daredevil gets beat up, and there's a lot of things happening.
This is a great issue. I mean, what?
No, go ahead, Pete. I'm sorry.
I love this issue. This isn't like, you know, there isn't 18 different fucking, different continuities going on. You don't have to worry about it. I think this is just a great, simple Spider-Man issue here where you got two Spider-Men hanging out, poking fun at coffee shops and life, and just kind of, just having a good old time here. Great action, great humor. This feels great. This feels good.
Are you
good.
Reading every other page? I'm just curious for no particular reason.
How dare you?
Just to get through it. Well, because it's funny you say that, Pete, because I actually think there was a lot of continuity explaining here. There was a lot of people being like, this is vermin. There's five of them now for some reason. Here's the things that are happening.
Yeah, but
this is Shift. He's like a bigger me sort of clone.
But those are all villain. This isn't like the main character. You know what I mean? Like,
You sound like me trying to defend X-Men 97 being accessible for anybody.
Yeah.
Right now.
Exactly.
Just so you know what you sound like.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Maybe.
You're both way over your skis is what we're talking about here.
Maybe I've been hurt by Spider-Man and this just seems like a safe place to be right now.
Yeah, because you know what a coffee shop is, and you see your Spider-Man in a coffee shop, you're like, they're just like me.
Exactly.
That Spider-Man, he's just like me.
Yeah, when you're relaxing with your lavender latte, you're like, I'm Spider-Man.
Yeah, that sounds gross, but yeah, all right.
It does sound gross.
It's funny you say that. I got one of those this past weekend.
A lavender latte?
Lavender matcha oat milk latte.
Oh, hot. God, get out of here.
Who are you?
I don't ever order that stuff.
I don't normally do this.
I only order it just like jump every into other the deep day. End
and no, get that, very specific with about how gross and disgusting this is.
It's not gross. I actually enjoyed it, but here's the thing. I usually drink black coffee hot.
Sure,
but I was at a job where they were like, you want like a fancy coffee? I was like, yeah, I do. And I literally pointed to one and I was like, can you make that one hot? And the woman was like, I don't know. And then they had to have a meeting about it.
No.
They were like, here it is. And I was like, wow. And it was good. I liked it.
Well, gross.
It was like eating a whole bar of soap.
On coffee and comic books. The end. Your opinion on comic books?
I agreed with you on this one. It was a little bit like not as fun. It was like more work than fun, weirdly, this Spider-Man issue. I thought. I did like the Umberto Ramos art.
Come on, the art. We can all agree.
Yeah.
Art was fantastic.
That is very good. I will reiterate what I said about the last issue. Like Greg Weisman, he's clearly setting up the sort of thing that's going to pay off in 6 issues time, or at this point, 5 issues time. We're going to be like, oh my God, that was clones. That's why we were following those people the entire time. I get it. I understand. It's going to work great for the trade. It does not work for me on a single issue basis.
Well, I just wish they were having just fun. They were just having some fun here.
Hey, you can be a douche if you want to, but you better fucking show some respect for the fucking art, man, because it's bananas.
It's funny that you say bananas is a term of respect, though.
Hey, Alex, say it, man. Say the art's unbelievable.
The art's unbelievable. Oh, my God. Don't
Thank
kill me.
You. What the fuck, man? Why is that so hard?
It's
great
not so
art.
Hard. We offer up our opinions, and we don't demand that other people offer up very specific opinions about stuff.
If you don't like the art, say it, but if it is this good, you have to acknowledge it.
Okay. If this is the new mode for the show going forward, that's what we're going to do. I agree with you, Pete. Wonder Woman number 8.
Wait, real quick. On your right, a beautiful sculpture of Michelangelo's David that has been described by many as being absolutely bananas.
That's a great description.
Yeah. Wonder Woman number 8 from DC Comics, written by Tom King, art by Daniel Semperi and Belen Ortega. Pete, fucking say that the art is good and the writing is good, or I'm going to slit your fucking throat. Take it away.
I love the passion, man.
No,
I love the passion.
That made me feel so bad. I felt bad.
It's awesome.
That.
Yeah, I agree with you, man. The art is that good. It's really... I think it's really well drawn and really worth murdering somebody over.
But here's the thing, Pete, you say that so much that I think your term of love, your bananas, is losing power.
I think part of it, just to defend Pete here, there is more than one banana in a bunch. And so there can be many bananas where the art is tight bananas. It isn't
that's
a
nice.
Singular banana.
Yeah, and it remind me, I'm going to take a bunch of bananas and take a slice from each and do a banana taste test so you can tell me the difference between each banana in the bunch that you're saying is
they're all
so
the same, man.
Different.
They're all the same.
No, they're not.
They got that's good exactly covers right. because the that's the only thing I read, and there you go. It's tight bananas. The art is really tight bananas, and the writing.
This was a great issue, though. I think that some really epic panels, her like hair breaking out of the lasso, was really a badass moment. Love the art style. Cool kind of mother-daughter moment here. I think this is a fun story, and also the backup was great.
Tom King sort of bringing the Tom King energy to this Wonder Woman book that we haven't really seen in his run so far. This feels very much like the Vision series over at Marvel, the much lauded Vision series. And
yeah, but not as depressing.
This is, interrupt for a second? And
yeah.
This is something I was wrestling with a bit because I've definitely turned a leaf and I really like this book. Always like the art. Daniel Semperi is like impeccable in this book. Love the backups. The stuff with Trinity is so much fun. Having a blast with that. This issue, I was like, this is Love Everlasting. You're doing the same thing as Love Everlasting. And I like the arc of it. It's well planned out. Tom King is meticulous in terms of what he puts out there. But taking Wonder Woman and putting her in a imaginary scenario where she has to be the perfect trad wife, basically, for Steve Trevor is kind of what he's doing over in Love Everlasting. So, I don't know. It felt mildly recycled here, which was a bummer.
It's interesting that you made the Love Everlasting comparison because I feel like there's never any gesture toward love in this because I feel like it had more like suburban nightmare situation that was out of the Vision series.
That's fair.
But I do think we're saying sort of the same thing, that it feels like the common point of like the locust point between all of Tom King's work is what he's doing here. I do think the part that I liked that was different was the fact that it was a villain was very much doing it. It felt awful in a way that I think these other series don't really focus it on like a direct hero villain relationship. And I love the way that the Wonder Woman spoiler breaks free in this issue in a powerful way.
This is so non-traditional for a comic book because you always want to like keep the surprise of, ooh, is the hero going to be the villain? And we know that, but we trick ourselves into thinking like, maybe Batman will lose this time, you know? The idea here that the Sovereign is the King of America is the one narrating this, and he's very upfront about, well, I lost, and here's how I lost. It's much more about, I mean, this is a terrible comparison, but it's like the increasingly poor decisions of Todd Margaret, except with the Sovereign, where he's like, this is how I thought I got it over on Wonder Woman. And I'll tell you what, sure didn't this time. It's great. Like, whatever my criticisms are, you're absolutely right, Pete. That moment at the end where she eventually breaks out of the lasso of lies completely got me. And I think that is, in terms of the pacing, in terms of everything else, is very, very well done. So incredibly well done series. This is a lesser issue for me, but at the same time, still very good beyond other things. Let's talk about Hackslash, Back to School, number 4 from Image Comics by Zoe Thorogood. This is the final issue of this series that is sending Cassie Hack, our slasher of slashers, to a school for slasher killers. It brings it back into continuity here. It weaves it back in.
Yeah.
In devastating fashion.
Heartbreak.
Oh, my God. I just, without spoiling anything here, there is a page flip, I think, is probably what it is, that went from like, wow, this is great, I'm really enjoying this, to complete disorientation reading the comic book. And I ultimately like read a couple of pages ahead, went back, read it again.
Oh, wow.
It works completely, but like it completely throws you for a loop when you're reading it. Great series. Very well done.
Agree. Like Hackslash in general, the characters we've loved for quite a long time. And this was like a departure from the main book in doing a lot of different things. And the way that they swerved it back onto the road, so to speak, in a way that was still upsetting. Like it was actually worse to have done that in a way that I could not have predicted in any way. It was really nice to see the progression of things that were happening. And then when what happens, it was, like you're saying, shocking, disorienting, and overall resets the game in a way that made the initial characters, Vlad and Cassie, like back together that in a way that really values that, I guess. Just trying to dance around the spoilers here, but like I thought this was a great series top to bottom.
Yeah, yeah. I don't want to be the one who kind of gives it away, but I was like, my favorite part about this comic is those two. But the way we got there, I felt shitty for rooting for what I wanted. You know what I mean? I was like, not like this, not like this. Yeah. But man, very emotional. But just to kind of put a train warning on this, don't read this in public because there is some nudity. You know what I mean?
That was actually something I wanted to mention because this was sold as a YA series set in the world of Hack Slash. It's not.
It is not that.
No, it's not. It's for adults. Still very good, but definitely don't be like, hey, teens, here's your introduction to Hack Slash, because it's not that.
Yeah. Also, really funny cover.
There you go. Nice. Giant Size Hulk, number one from Marvel, written by Philip Kennedy Johnson, art by Andrea Brocardo. This is directly picking up on Philip Kennedy Johnson's run on Hulk and following up on it. Bruce Banner is being a hobo on a train, traveling with traveling companion who has been trapped in a wooden doll. And he is fighting a crossroads devil who has taken over the train and is harvesting hobos. I was hoping this would do it. We talked to Philip Kennedy Johnson about this book back at Baltimore Comic Con. He 100% paid off on it. This is the first book that feels like it is actually paid off on the giant size premise by doing these great double page spread fights in the middle of the book that are super, super fun. It feels big. It feels enjoyable. It's part of the main continuity that really pushes it forward in an interesting way. Had a great time with this.
Yes, this is a blast. This is, I mean, you know, Hulk versus Train Demon. Hell yeah, sign me up for that. Just epic battles.
Choo-choo.
Ton of fun. Just really kind of cool, old school kind of feel. Especially the backup story was really great. I think this is a great package. Solid package.
It's nice if the main Hulk book feels like sort of the indie horror movie. Mm-hmm. This feels like the blockbuster version of it. So perfect, like you're saying, Alex, to be in a giant size format. I like this demon, the way that he sort of like gets into the Hulk's muscles, I thought was really cool. And this mission he's on, where he has to protect this fragile little doll, is such a great not good for Hulk mission. You wouldn't want to be like, Hulk, now just walk these plates out to the dinner table, and that's what he has to do over and over again.
I just wanted to say, Justin, you know, just hearing you talk so passionately about the train demon, I think that'd be a good casting role for you. I could see you as like a train demon for sure.
What do you think? Because I have sort of a whistle stop, a wistful Americana.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Sort of
yeah.
an Amtrak Justin kind of
but
a thing.
But also you could take charge. You know what I mean? The old Indiana Jones ticket, please. You know what I mean? Like, I believe that as well. You know what I mean?
Choo-choo, baby.
Two things I want to say before we move on. Backup Story, which is a reprint of an old Peter David issue. I really appreciated reading, not only because it was another story with the Hulk set on a train, but also it had a horrific transformation, which I forgot predates Immortal Hulk. You know, like always been part and parcel of it. So I was like, oh, right. This was always a thing with the Hulk. That was good.
Peter David.
And the other thing, if you ever want to see an IRL Hulk versus Train Demon fight, Long Island Railroad, any line, 1 a.m., 100%.
Yeah. Get also, there. Get there, guys.
Dalbatron, what's your thoughts on casting JT Sizz as a Train Demon?
As a casting agent, sure, I'd love to do that.
See?
Casting agent. Wow, look at you guys.
That's a universal thumbs up right there.
Not quite sure why still, but okay.
Yeah. I'm just guessing ads.
Yeah, I mean, you put out Train Demon energy. I don't know why you're fighting it. You know what I mean?
You're right. And let's make sure we cast you guys as well before the end of this episode.
Absolutely. Oh, I Heart Skull Crusher, number two from Boom Studios, written by Josie Campbell, art by Alessio Zotto. I said this on the live show, but this is basically Mad Max meets Dodgeball as a woman is trying to make to the Screaming Paintball Championship. She's building up a ragtag team to get there. This issue, she's found a great player she wants to recruit, and she's trying really hard to do it. Love this book. I mean, we'll see where it goes, but like with the premise, you would think this is not all ages. It is. It's under the Boombox imprint. It's very fun. I'm having a great time reading this. Love this book.
Yeah. Oh, go ahead.
This is 100% fun. I love the running, the little runner underneath of the one of the people they're trying to recruit who is been spending too much time with the mutants. I thought was really fun and funny, and the way that it plays into the climax, I thought was great.
Yeah, I agree with what everything you guys have both said. I also want to just kind of comment. I really love the art style, this kind of anime manga style and great kind of character, fun facial expressions, that kind of cool tone that it kind of gives off. It's a fun world to kind of jump into and really makes you kind of want more because it creates such a cool kind of look and feel to it that you kind of want to be a part of it.
Dudley Dotson and the Forever Machine, number one from Dark Horse Comics, written by Scott Snyder, art by Jamal Igel. This is yet another title that Scott Snyder and Jamal Igel, of course, published through Comixology, and now we're getting two issues at a time stuck in a book together. This is about a kid who is an inventor, but maybe not the greatest inventor of all time, and the talking dog that he teams up with. This is delightful. An absolute delight from top to bottom. I think Scott Snyder does a really good job writing here. Of course, we always like his writing, but the true star here is Jamal Igel's art, which is incredibly charming throughout. The dog in particular is a wonderful character. What did you guys think?
Incredible bananas on this art from top to bottom. But yeah, I think I like this book. I think it's fun. It's a nice departure from Scott Snyder's other books that have been incredibly dark of late. I'm talking about Dungeon specifically. This is much more on the bright, shiny, sci-fi epic side of things, and it's fun.
Yeah, I agree. You know, crazy type bananas as Jamal Igel always is. And it's fun to see these guys team up on something, and it's nice to see that, you know, this brings out Scott's brighter side a little bit. I mean, Zelbatron spoiled it, but there's a talking dog, and that's fucking crazy, because as soon as the dog starts talking to you, you got to be like, hey, well, what was all that barking earlier? You know what I mean? Like, what were you trying to fucking tell me? Yeah, like, what was that about? Now that you can talk, like, what the fuck are we doing?
I think we can all agree that nothing bad has ever happened when somebody starts talking to a dog, right?
Well, I don't know about that.
What are you talking about specifically?
Wasn't it Manson who had a dog that told him to kill people?
Oh, wow. Nice.
That's kind of insane. Wait, are you
blaming the Manson murders on a dog? You think the dog
I don't think it was Charlie's fault.
Oh, Jesus. Charlie? Real nickname basis.
What the fuck, dude?
We really
think the dog made him eat it, too?
I mean, talking about someone who's going to try to make you eat something gross, now dog makes a lot of sense.
Come on, don't blame the dog.
They eat each other's
poop. Come on, dude.
Yeah, you know,
Pip, don't slip, bro.
Pip is slipping just from old age. I know we're tracking down this horrible serial killer, but have you guys checked out the dog? Because that dog's
somebody's
got to
question that fucking dog.
That dog looks guilty.
Yeah, I'll question that dog, but give him sweet pats. Fall of the House of X, number four from Marvel, written by Jerry Duggan, art by Lucas Wernick and Jeff
Duggan,
Morales.
You asshole.
Oh, my God. Oh, I'm sorry.
All right. It's okay, man. It happens. I'm just trying to help.
Yeah.
That was really helpful. That's the most helpful way to do that. I saw you help an old lady across the street the other day, Pete, and she was ruined afterwards.
You know what's upsetting is you yelling at an old lady, helping her across the street, and then she's mad at you. It's like, well, what the fuck?
It's like, oh, I'm sorry, you don't want to be shot put across the street? Come on.
Did you earn that merit badge, though, Pete, for helping that old lady?
No.
No. Your sash is looking very good, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
Boy Scouts got sash. Thing?
Oh, my God.
Anyway, in this issue, a bunch of X-Men yes? stuff.
Describe what happens.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yes, I have a lot of questions.
Yes, God. Alex.
Apocalypse is trying to kill a bunch of mutants on Mars to help reactivate Krakoa. Meanwhile, the mutants on Earth are fighting back against Orcus. They've realized the robots are in charge, and Charles Xavier betrays everybody to Nimrod for reasons unknown, but I think we can pretty much assume it's to tie into what he is doing in the future. He knows they're going to lose in the present. So he's trying to set them up for a win in the future. I don't think anybody's going to see it that way, but Xavier was right.
Oh, fuck you.
Wow.
Fuck you. What the fuck? I mean, Jesus.
There's a lot of crazy things happening in this.
Back some of that, would you?
And but I will say the most upsetting is this character of Wrong Slide that is like a Rock Slide spinoff.
Yeah, where he's like, I'm a piece of Rock Slide who finally became alive.
Hey, tell Rock Slide I love him.
Feed like, my this... blood to Krakoa.
I was like, this is devastating to have it. But also strange to be like, who can we kill in this issue? How about a clone of a very mildly popular character? But, I mean, I do like the epic nature here. I have some general, a light complaint that I want to save for when we talk about another book in this stack, but I'm excited that this is coming to a big climactic point.
The only thing that I enjoyed was the last panel when someone showed up and was full of rage, and I was like, well, I can relate to that. Yeah, I mean, people sacrificing themselves to try to save Fuck Island does not make sense to me, along with a lot of the things that are happening in this book. I'm going to keep reading and hoping that things get better.
Pete, I got to ask a question here, and we haven't really talked about this on the podcast, but there was that point when you rallied with a bunch of people to save Sandals, and I feel like that's a very similar situation. Do you take anything away from that?
Well, first off, Sandals is for all of us, okay? Fuck Island is a very specific place that not everybody is welcome. You know, everybody can have their own personal Sandals, okay? But Fuck Island is very exclusive, and fuck you for even trying to compare those.
Sorry, Pete, I actually just got a call from Sandals, and they're going to use your quote in their commercial. They're going to quote you.
If Sandals.
It's for all
Sandals.
Of us.
Yeah. It's very similar to Krakoa is for all mutants. I just want to point that out there.
But... Well, it's not. There are a couple of people who couldn't get in. Okay. And also, you know, there's more people.
Oh, did they have no
mutants.
Shirt and no shoes? So there was no service? Is that what happened?
Yeah, there like, were a couple of people who couldn't go through the fucking membrane. Don't act like you weren't fucking.
The membrane at Sandals?
Yeah. No, the membrane in Fuck Island. They couldn't go there. They wouldn't get in.
How many margaritas do you have to drink before you can walk through the membrane at Sandals?
Half.
The gateway.
Half a margarita. Yeah, you have to walk right
You have
in.
To be drunk enough to shout, I'm a mutant.
I'm a mutant. Sandals.
Sandals
is for
doesn't
all
exclude,
of us.
Dude. The membrane lets everybody in.
Sandals is for all humans. Let me in. Batman off world.
No, just before you move on, I love Pete. You've been slagging off Fuck Island for over a year, and you're like, you know what's really great? Sandals, which a regular person probably calls Fuck Island. That's truly
go fuck yourself. And you're a fucking
for you to
tower.
Like Sandals and hate hey! This it, Ivory Tower.
Yeah, who's above Sandals? That's what I want to know.
The Quiet Council of Sandals. We all know this.
They run Sandals with an iron fist. They have locked up their Sabretooth, who is like some frat bro Jimmy Buffett impersonator.
They threw him into the bottom of the ball pit, and he'll never get out. Batman Off-World, number 4 from DC Comics, written by Jason Aaron, art by Doug Mankey. Batman is still in space. He's coming for the Black Sun Mining Company, the people behind enslaving Batman a bunch of folks in the Slag Galaxy. And in this issue, we're not only cutting back to Gotham, but also getting a bunch of people questioning, Batman, why are you still here? You need to go home, please.
Same. I was like, Batman, go home.
No, yeah, dude, this is a blast. I don't want Batman to ever go home. This is so much fun, man. First off, sick cover. Sick cover, bro. All right. This is a blast to see kind of Batman out of his comfort zone, pushing himself past the brink. Also, I love how bad he is at relationships. Like him and this girl, you know, don't get me wrong. I officially ship Bat and Cat, but these two, oh, this is great. This is fun.
Bat Cat's over, so I think you should ship Space Merc.
She has tattoos. Do you want to say Bat and Tat?
Ooh, no, yes.
I don't want to say that. And it's not, it maybe I'm taking a break right now, but it's not fucking over, bro.
This takes place back in time, so it's okay.
That's true.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I want to throw something out at you guys. I feel like based on this issue, given what we're talking about, I think there's an emotional turn coming here. And the emotional turn I think is coming is why Batman is like, I need to leave Gotham, go into space, train, not leave space. Maybe the conclusion at the end here is exactly what he's saying, where he's like, I got to be strong enough. I got to take down this space threat so I protect Gotham. But it feels like there's something else there.
Space orphans need help too, bro. I don't know why you're having a problem with this.
I think there's something else motivating him. And I think we're going to end this series with a surprising gut punch, which I don't
know. Oh, no!
That, just to throw that out there.
Yeah, like he crashes on a planet of butlers, space butlers.
Yeah, something like that. No, I don't know. I think he's avoiding things. He is avoiding his responsibility to Gotham by staying in space too long.
He's trying to sharpen himself so he's ready to get back to Gotham.
He's already sharp.
He's pretty sharp. Though I will say, I do like when they cut back to Gotham and Commissioner Gordon's like, Turn off the light. Batman's probably in space. He's probably to somebody else. Probably in space.
He's probably monologuing in space right now.
This book is great. The art is great. Doug Mankey's phenomenal designs are so good throughout this book. Let's turn to another space book, Moon Man, number 2 from Image Comics.
Oh, is that why we put Scott Muscutty and Space Block?
Space Block. Ooh.
No, let's. And just a note
you
to post.
Into such a, you like had disgust for your own self. That was glorious.
Let's make sure we clip that because I think Space Block is going to be something we're going to want to hold on to.
That's a t-shirt. That's a t-shirt right there.
Space Block
That just like a
Beach
regret.
Boys song.
He just had so much regret for the choice that he made. He's like, who am I?
And let's say what it's instant regret. Doing? He didn't need to stop and make fun of himself, but he did.
It was terrible.
And I appreciate it.
By Scott Muscutty and Kyle Higgins, art by Marco Licati. We are following a dude who went to space who looks a lot like Scott Muscutty, a.k.a. Kid Cudi. You may know him as that as well.
Yes.
And he's come back to Earth and has a bunch of powers. He's using it as a vigilante to protect folks in the city. Now, I know we love the art in the first issue. Found it to be very kinetic.
Yeah.
We're a little mixed about the story. Justin, I'll turn to you. How did you feel about issue number 2?
I mean, sort of similar. Like, I do like the story. It's just a little sort of fractured, I feel like. And maybe that could be purposeful because I think we're dealing with characters who had an event happen that is making their lives a little fractured. So that's cool. But I continue to say the art is really cool and different. And I love sort of the very swirly, organic nature to the expression of the superpowers here.
Yeah, I agree. The arts are a real winner here. This is really kind of a cool kind of tone that's setting up here and a pace that the art kind of sets itself for. I'm just waiting for the kind of main character to turn into like a space DJ or something. You know what I mean? Mm. Like really bring it home.
Yeah. Mm. Totally. Spider-Woman number six.
Oh, sorry, real quick, Alex, yeah. I think we just ended Space Block, so. there it is. The fans appreciate it. The fans appreciate it.
Spider-Woman number six from Marvel, written by Steve Fox, art by Iguara. Now, we read the first couple of issues of this book, and it was stuck in the Gang War storyline. We were very mixed about it, really liked the art, wanted to like the book, but felt like it was going in too many directions. We're now past that arc, so I thought it was worth checking in with this again, seeing if it improved. Now we have Spider-Woman. She is on the road. She's headed out to the West Coast, and in this issue, she's tangling with Star, sort of the evil Captain Marvel, who is powered by the Reality Infinity Stone. I like this much better. My only bummer, this is a spoiler for the end, she reaches her destination, so I think this is just one issue. I'm very into like the whole hard traveling heroes thing where somebody like, I'm stopping across America. I wish this had gone on for longer, but as is, I liked it a bit, quite more than the first couple of issues.
Yeah, I agree. It's definitely to have Spider-Woman being on her own finally and doing the things, sort of the quest that was set up at the beginning, like trying to track down her son. And we got some sort of strange reveals coming out of the Gang War event. But I really like the inclusion of Star here. That's a character like Hallow's Eve that we've liked, I think. Mm-hmm. An interesting villain character that I think has a lot of potential juice. So to see her here, I thought was a great contrast to Spider-Woman, who was just hanging out with Captain Marvel, now has to battle the evil version.
Well, I feel like this should have been in our train block because we get another fun train fight scene here. Yeah, I'm enjoying this. I really thought, first off, Spider-Woman on a bike, cool cover, bro. You know
the cover was actually very good, I agree.
Yeah. I think the pacing of this is really cool. I love the action and kind of pitting her against Star. It was great. I'm having a good time with this. Also, I wanted to kind of point out Marvel's been doing this Paul Nearly in Memoriam, which has been really kind of nice and touching in the Marvel books right now. So I just want to give a quick shout out to that.
Yep. That is a good shout out. I will say there are a lot of older statesmen of comic books that have been passing away recently, and we've had like near constant tributes in comic books, and it's really bumming me out. Like, I'm glad they're doing it, but it's just like this whole generation is going away at this point, and it's very sad. Anyway, Animal Pound number 3 from Boom Studios, written by Tom King, art by Peter Gross. In this issue, it's election time for our cats and dogs and buddies, and things end up absolutely horrifying here. This is the issue that this really clicked into place for me. I talked a little bit about with the first and second issue where I felt like it was almost hewing a little too close to Animal Farm. This takes it into the modern era, gives it more of a riff, and ends with a panel that is extremely upsetting.
Oh, my God.
And beautifully drawn by Peter Gross, I thought. And I agree. Like, I think this book is great. I really like Animal Farm, the book. I think Tom King's doing a great job of adapting it and sort of slowly letting us in on what his take is, which seems to be about adapting it to modern politics, taking it out of like the communism metaphor and putting it into partisan division and a lot of the politics that we are currently grappling with without getting too specific. And I think it's very subtly and smartly done.
Yeah, I mean, this is a kind of great heightening of this idea, like you guys were talking about in classic Tom King. He's kind of playing with our emotions with the slow reveal of information. The fucking last panel, man. I don't know. That was so powerful that I was kind of like, I'm not sure I want to keep reading.
Yeah. It feels like a, I don't know, not memoir, but sort of, I'm blanking on the word, but like it's the sort of thing looking back all the time. It's a document being like, this happened, and we're walking you through what happened. It's very removed from it, which makes harrowing emotional moments like what we get at the end hit that much harder. Great book. Blue Book, 1947, number 3 from Dark Horse Comics, written by James Tynion IV, art by Michael Avon Oeming.
JT4.
We are continuing to follow the iconic alien investigation surrounding Roswell. That's sort of where we end up here. And in a backup story by Chris Condon and Jacob Phillips, the team from over at That Texas Blood, we're getting sort of like a bunch of cryptid, urban legend-y type things. I like the front story. Like I've said a million times, Michael Avon Oeming is doing like the work of his career, I think, in this book. But man, that backup story was good. I
so love good.
Just like a bunch of kids going around in a car telling horrible ghost stories to each other. And ultimately, like they said in Pirates of the Caribbean, you best start believing in ghost stories because you're in one.
That's
what they deal with here, you know?
Wow. You've really taken that to heart.
Yeah, way to take the message of
I'm just trying to update my references forward. From 1993 to 2003.
Oh, and let me say, this explains why you're wearing that full Captain Jack Sparrow costume. I can't, because I didn't want to mention it earlier, but now it makes a lot of sense.
Can I ask you guys a question?
Why your legs have got to be hurt.
Why is the rum always gold?
Wow. Yeah, I just want to jump on the fact that the art's unbelievable. The blue kind of not only in the title, but then as a color choice is such a cool, smart move and artistically done in such a way that doesn't feel like overdone, but just kind of perfectly done, if that makes sense. Yeah, I just think that this is a very creative way of doing something and makes me kind of like proud of comics that you're exploring things in this kind of cool, unique way that only comics can do.
Wow. I love that take. I also really enjoy this book, and the backup here just makes it an even better package.
Black Great Widow package. And Hawkeye, number 2 from Marvel, written by Stephanie Phillips, art by Paolo Villanelli. In this issue, Hawkeye has been accused of killing a ambassador, dignitary, I don't remember.
One of those.
Whatever it is, Black Widow is trying to help him out / get information about this, leading up to the reveal of a character that I don't know who they are.
Yeah, I say I was like, his last line on the last page is like, I bet they'll want to hear from my name, and I was like, I'm so sorry, sir. Could you please just say how I know you?
They have a flashback of the issue to one of Black Widow and Hawkeye's original adventures, and I flip back to that being like, surely they're fighting whoever this is in this backup from back in the day, and they're not. They're 100% not. That is the first time whoever that is appears in the issue. I do like the art. I like Stephanie Phillips' writing. The scene where Black Widow steals a bunch of street food, some dumplings and stuff. Very hungry when I was reading that.
The name of the character is Damon Dran.
Yep.
And he had his major appearance, or he was created in 1972 by Jerry Conway and Gene Colan. And he is a cyborg.
Oh, cool. Spoilers, dude.
Hey, you know what?
Notable alias.
Good for him.
Notable alias, the Indestructible Man.
Oh, fun.
Gonna old be hard school. To destruct him, I think.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, this is kind of a fun, but also a little weird. The kind of Venom Black Widow controlling like little goopy spiders kind of doesn't do anything for me. I don't know. I'm still having fun with this.
I like Black Widow with a a goop. I think like it's nice. The symbiote is cool. I like the way she uses it in this issue. I like the flashbacks into their relationship is really fun. I'm on board with this. I can't wait to get to know Damon Dran.
I'm definitely going to remember that name two reviews from now. Green Lantern War Journal number 8 from DC Comics, written by Philip Kennedy Johnson, art by Montos. Bunch of things going on in this issue as John Stewart is off in space fighting some villains. Meanwhile, the construct that he's created of his dead sister to Alzheimer-ridden mother. Is that fair?
That's fair. I think stricken.
That's probably a better word. Mother Company is dealing with the radiant dead constructs from another dimension. Lots of things going on here. What'd you guys think about this issue?
Well, this is some really just kind of like some badass panels here. We got some amazing art, some amazing action. I loved the kind of badassery that happened here, but this fucking mom evil kid shit is freaking me the fuck out and hard to enjoy the other parts of the comic.
I think it's appropriately scary. I really liked it. I think I've been saying this for a while, that I think the Green Lantern universe is really hitting a nice stride. Between just the way that they're able to keep slotting in Green Lanterns in different books without having it feel so overwhelming or disparate. It just feels like they're people that are always together sort of doing stuff. And it's just much more cohesive in a way that's really been working for me.
Ghost Rider, Final Vengeance, number 2 from Marvel, written by Benjamin Percy, art by Danny Kim. The new Ghost Rider is the Hood. And in this issue, we're following along with him as he flexes with his powers and figures out exactly what's going on with him. Also, there's some stuff going on with Danny Ketch.
Johnny Blaze.
I don't know. What are the other guys?
Johnny Blaze.
Yeah, whatever it is, that's going on. Let me throw this out there. I really like the first issue, how apocalyptic it got. This issue, a little bit of a step down here, but I think my biggest issue is I wish this was just the Hood becomes a Ghost Rider title. I don't need Danny Ketch. I don't need Johnny Blaze or anything like that. Like, I just want to follow what happens when a villain becomes Ghost Rider, because I think that's interesting. And we're not quite there yet as they kind of come around to it in this issue. But I think we're going to get more of that in the next issue.
Yeah, definitely. I think it is coming around. And I think it's cool. But when I was reading this, I was like, you know what I think the better version of this? Because the Hood is like a bad guy. Mm-hmm. And we see Mephisto being like, pretty cool that you're the Ghost Rider now. And he's like, it is cool. I'm going to do some bad stuff. And they're like, ha ha. They're all having a laugh. I want to see a bad villain, like a trapster, become Ghost Rider or something, where like it's someone who's like, I'm bad, but I don't want to be lighting people on fire and making them turn to mush and see what that
it's
would
interesting
be.
You called out Trapster as a really bad villain.
Yeah, that was.
I mean, not a really bad villain. I mean, like a villain who's bad at being a villain. Like,
so like Stiltman.
Like the Flash's rogues. I know that's DC, but like villains like that, they're like, yeah, we're just doing this because we need a little bit of money.
Well,
and giving them true like control of vengeance.
I hear what you're saying. The Hood is a good idea there, except for the fact that they've. So this is going to come out too strong, but they've so like ruined the Hood as a character from where Brian K. Vaughan started him that he's not at that level anymore. Like, I think what Benjamin Percy is doing here is being like, he touches on the history of the Hood, but he's basically saying like, yes, the Hood was a small time crook who got a magic hood that had kind of allowed him to do some stuff and step it up a little bit. He always had dreams of something more, which is what was set up in the initial miniseries, which was so good. And then he became like, I'm the kingpin of crime. I'm demonically powered. I can fight the Avengers to a standstill, et cetera, et cetera. What Benjamin Percy is doing is like, I am recognizing that, but I'm taking him back to the place that Brian K. Vaughan had him at. So I think that kind of does work there as a character if you erase everything in the middle, which is sort of what they're doing.
Yeah, but I have a hard time erasing everything in the middle because that's not possible. Really.
I think in comics, brains work.
That's not how brains work. But I think that like it, the underlying note I have is like because the Hood had demonic powers, it feels like, oh, we've already been here before a little bit, and I wish we came at it from a completely different angle. But having said all that, I do like some of the stuff they're playing with here. And I like that Johnny Blaze is still in the mix.
Johnny Blaze.
Yeah, so first off, cool badass cover. You know what I mean? It's like two guns, but when you put them together, it kind of looks like one gun. And I don't know why that's cooler, but it kind of looks cool. Also, it was kind of funny how like the Hood, you know, even though he had the powers, he was still kind of like walking away. And I was like, Ghost Rider rides, bro. You need something, a car, a motorcycle. So I'm glad we kind of took care of that in this issue. But I'm interested because I think Percy has great ideas. So I'm interested to see why the choice of the Hood and why that's going to kind of make sense as we move forward with this idea. I'm a Ghost Rider fan, so I'm interested in how this is going to work out.
Sorry, did you mean Ghost Rider or Ghost Writer? The PBS television show where a ghost teaches
ride.
Kids to read.
Ride.
I just wanted to clarify because I know you love words too in reading.
I'm by the way, I'm write or die for
for this comic.
Either way, Ain't No Grave number one from Image Comics, written by Scotty Young, art by Jorge Corona.
This don't spoil it.
May 8th. So Pete, please don't spoil this one. But they already spoiled the premise, the blurb, which is interesting. This is about a woman who was a gunslinger back in the day, and she becomes sick. She heads off on a quest.
Stop spoiling.
With that, this is all in the synopsis. It's okay. Jorge Corona doing art over on Transformers, doing a fantastic job here as well. I think Scotty Young gives this a really, really solid setup with some family drama with a badass gunslinger at the same time. I wish the premise was not saved from the last page because that's not my favorite mode of things, but it's a great last line, so I can't complain too much.
Yeah, I agree. Can't complain about this. I think it's fun. I like the art. It's fantastic.
There's a poll quote for the cover. Comic Book Club, can't complain.
Yeah. Well, we often do. But I'll take it out of that quote and say, like, this is really good. The art is fantastic. I like the tone that Scotty Young strikes with the character. Feels a little bit different, and the kind of wistful Western tone in a new light.
Yeah, this is great art. Badass main character. Yeah, I'm excited to spend some more time with her. Really cool last panel. Seems really badass. More, please. Great team, great package.
Ain't No Grave, more like Yes No Grave. Don't be brave.
Give me that grave, I say.
More grave,
take
please.
Me to the grave.
Yeah. This grave is graved.
Wow.
Captain Marvel.
I think you just died.
I did.
Space Buck. Ooh.
Captain Marvel number 7 from Marvel, written by Alyssa Wong, art by Jan Basaldúa. We have been following Captain Marvel as she is bonded in the Naga Bands to a new character named Yuna, I want to say. Really should be a character name. Anyway, Yuna and Captain Marvel have gotten separated. They're trying to get back together in this issue. Meanwhile, they're trying very hard to get Mar-Vell, the previous Captain Marvel, or one previous Captain Marvel, back to normal as he has been taken over by the villain. Enter Rick Jones in this issue. Very fun. I continue to have a great time with this book.
Yeah, I've been really enjoying it. I'm not always the biggest Captain Marvel fan, but I think this has been a great run. I love the connection between her and Yuna. And you mentioned Rick Jones. I love in this comic, he's like, hey, I was on vacation in the microverse, and you guys had to come and show up. I'm on vacation. I was like, what are you doing in the microverse, dude? Is there a sandals there? Because that's the only way you're going to have a fun time on vacation. It's for all of us, right?
Microverse, where they got micro machines there? Sign me up. Yeah, this is
what
this
is, you like them because they're like tiny truck daddies.
Oh boy, you guys didn't like micro machines? Come on,
yeah, Pete, you have to do the rest of your review like the micro machines guy. Take it away.
Oh my god, that's hilarious.
That's good casting.
Yeah, there we go. I don't even remember how that works. Is it, he just talks fast? Isn't that?
Yeah, he just talks fast.
Yeah. Okay, crazy last panel, really fun, great action, great art, very enjoyable story, well drawn.
Not bad. That was not fast enough. Do it again.
It was certainly shouted, though.
Okay. Helen of Winter, number two from Dark Horse Comics, written by Tom King, art by Bill Kosefeli. In this issue, we have Helen Winter is living in an ancestral man. Mansion that is owned by her grandfather. Her grandfather is back. He seems to be the barbarian from the stories that her father wrote, and she is dealing with that in many weird ways as her daddy continues to deal with it try not to grapple with it at all, as well as the fantastical creatures that they're seeing all over the mansion's estate. Meanwhile, not exactly in the present day, but a interviewer is continuing to try to figure out exactly what was going on. There are a little bit of shades of, was it called Adam Strange? What was it? Adventures.
Strange Adventures.
Yeah.
With the book signing stuff and the layouts there that are going on in this issue. But man, I am very much into everything that is happening here. These are complicated, broken characters that I'm excited to follow going forward.
So much Tom King in this block, the stack. A lot of King coming out. I will say the sections that are in the quote, so the sort of present, we cut to them without really any context. So I'm surprised to have them there when we are not given much for why. But otherwise, I'm sure that will be revealed very soon. But otherwise, I mean, this is fun. It's another world. I like how fucked up everybody is, for lack of better terms. And it's fun.
Yeah, it's fun to see people drunk and with swords. Cool cover.
You should go to a Renaissance fair, Pete.
Oh, yeah, man. That's a good point. I should.
Or a Waffle House.
Okay. I like people who have no respect for dinner tables. You know what I mean? Just fucking trash them as you see fit. I also agree with Justin. Next time in the stack, we should have a King block.
Ooh, ooh, ooh.
Dead X-Men number four from Marvel, written by Steve Fox, art by Juan Baldion. I think we should have a foxhole where we take all of Steve Fox's.
Yeah, a lot of Fox out here. The Fox.
This is the final
king.
Issue of Dead X-Men, which is following a team of formerly Dead X-Men as they try to stop a alternate universe Moira from destroying all of reality, ultimately looping into what is going on in Rise of the Powers of X. I was curious to check in with this one on the last issue. I don't think it quite paid off on the Exile style premise, but I still like the characterizations and art throughout.
Yeah, I do like this book, but this is the one I was referencing when we were talking about the Fall of the House of X. Like the way everyone is talking about and treating Professor X is annoying, is bothersome to me, because they're like, Rachel Summers is like, oh, come on, I'm having a hard day. I just realized that Professor X has been lying to me when I should have expected that. That's his whole thing, lying. And I'm like, why? What? I want this event, or I want a story that is about redeeming Professor X or something, because every storyline for a decade is about how Professor X has compromised, and it's like for quote unquote the greater good, but it's actually bad all the time. And I just don't understand why everyone wants to just lump on Professor X as a character.
It's because if you look at the timeline, everybody came of age when the Professor X is a jerk issue came out, and I was like, he is, got it, check.
And the compromises, though, that Professor X is making are fucked up. And I'm just like, surely there's a better way, man. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. I think he is, my theory is he is ultimately going to save mutant kind and be punished for it. Is what will probably happen.
I will say I really like the art here, and especially the book sort of flips at a point and does this great multi-page sort of connected spread that I thought was really cool.
Yeah.
I have no idea what the fuck is happening. It just feels like they're playing with this idea of what if Charles Xavier went back in time and murdered a baby.
That's
a fun idea to play with.
That is, in fact, the idea they're playing with, yes. So,
but
what
he
if?
Has a beard.
I'm glad you guys are having fun with it.
It's great. I love speculating about killing babies. Titans, number 10 from DC Comics, written by Tom Taylor.
Guy's a father.
Lucas Meyer, not anymore. This issue, Trigon kind of is making some big moves, or at least his son is. Raven has been taken over by her worst impulses and is essentially trying to bring hell on Earth. That's what we're plugging our way towards. What do you guys think about this?
This is a blast. I think that, evil fathers as Zalbajon just pointed out, they'll do anything. They'll throw their kids around like they mean nothing to them and set traps for them. But yeah, this trident, this evil trident does look like a bat symbol in kind of a weird way that I was just kind of like, I don't know if that's on purpose or not, but it's kind of freaking me out. But I'm having a blast with this. I think the art's great. I love all the action. This kind of fun pull that Raven has to her connection to her dark powers is a fun thing to play with.
Yeah, and it's fun. I like a lot of the underlying stories, the Garth stuff coming out of the event where he was the villain slash hero. I like having the other Garth here in the book. And so I actually want more of that. I hope we get a little bit more split between the different team members.
Spider-Boy, number 6 from Marvel, written by Dan Slott, art by Paco Medina and Walden Wong and Julian Shaw. Spider-Boy has been captured by Madame Monstrosity, the woman who created him. We're getting a bunch of big mythology things that spin out in this issue as Dan Slott continues to build out this side of the Spider-Man world. Justin, I'm curious to hear from you because you've been a little oversaturated with Spider-Boy. What did you think about this?
Well, in reading this issue, I feel like what Dan Slott is doing is writing a Spider-Man book, Spider-Boy book, for kids. It's like a much younger tone to it. And, that's cool. That's great. It feels like it is that, and he's created a character that can be a spider person for the new generation, say. And like, that's cool. It's just, it hasn't really hit me in the same way of really loving it.
Yeah, I think it's clear Dan Slott is having a blast with this, and that kind of makes me have fun. I mean, that line where, Spider-Boy's trying to save this girl who's kind of being trapped, and then she comes out of this kind of chamber, like, it didn't work, and it hilariously did. I mean, that was just such a fun kind of moment that I laughed out loud about. So the humor is literally jumping off the page here. And I think, yes, it is slided towards a younger kind of thing, but that's why they called it Spider-Boy. So if you know what you're signing up for, you should have a blast with this.
Lotus Land, number 6 from Boom Studios, written by Darcy Van Poelgeest, art by Caio Felipe. This is the final issue of this title. That is finding a detective investigating a weird mystery involving stuff. No, I don't know. I mean, we've talked a lot about how the actual plot of this book is a little hard to focus on, but at the same time, I care about this character who can feel other people's feelings, the ultimate reveal of what happened with him and his son. I thought it was very emotionally done.
Oh, my God. The
resolution here was very well done as well. It really follows the noir tropes throughout it, but gives it this bizarre sci-fi sheen at the same time. Even though I couldn't quite follow the series at some all points, I still enjoyed reading it, and I appreciated reading it.
Yeah, I get that. It was sort of like watching a movie with the sound off and being like, ooh, I wonder what they're saying, because I don't know. But it's visually interesting, and the things I didn't quite understand didn't bother me that much when the positives, I think, helped to uplift something that I didn't quite understand.
Yeah, I agree with what you guys are saying. More towards the Zelbatron, though, of it. Yeah, there were parts where I was a little lost, but I do think they landed it pretty nicely. And, you know, if you're about to die, you know, you get one last smoke. You know what I mean? And this comic gets that.
Totally. Let's take one last smoke here on the podcast with Avengers Twilight number 5 from Marvel, written by Chip Zdarsky, art by Daniel Acuna, as the reformed Avengers take the fight to Red Skull, who's decided to stop playing nice and get real. And he is coming for America.
Real world.
He is bonded with an Ultron body. And, he's trying to destroy everything.
One thing I will fight both of you on is this art is unfucking believable. I mean, you want to talk about worth it for the art alone. I mean, this is just crazy bananas tight here. I mean, come on.
Why would you fight us when we agree?
Yeah. Well, that's why I'm hoping that you better agree with that, because otherwise you're wrong.
Wow. To be bullied so hard right at the end.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I think this is really good. I think this comic keeps getting better as the issues go on, as everything sort of solidifies and comes together. I really like the Tony Stark versus his son stuff. And, you know, in a book like this, you're rarely sort of riding with the villain so hard. And in this, we're sort of on Red Skull's shoulder the whole time as he attacks these Avengers. I thought the Luke Cage moment was really cool.
Yes.
This is just, I'm looking forward to the next issues, I believe, is the last issue, and I'm looking forward to see how it ends up.
If you'd like to support this podcast and all the podcasts we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Facebook and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about comic books. Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice to subscribe. Listen and follow the show. I don't know. At Comic Book Live on Twitter/X, Comic Book Club Live on TikTok and Instagram, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club.
And let's sign off as we always do. Space Black. Ooh. Ooh. Ooh.